This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 14th of April, 1957. The title of this lecture is Scientology and Children. It is Radiation and Your Survival, tape number 9. Copyright 1957 by L. Ron Hubbard in the United Kingdom. Copyright 1978 by L. Ron Hubbard in the USA. All rights reserved. Unauthorized translation, duplication, importation, and distribution is a violation of applicable laws. This tape is 64 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Thank you. Actually, I've told you everything I know, and it's very difficult, you know, to dream up something. Very hard to do. At the end of this particular lecture, why we will consign a name on an in-think. But right now, we will tell you something about the handling, care, and control of in-thinks. Okay? There's some of you could use this. The hardest thing in the world to process is a child. Why? Because he's out of communication. That's why. Let's take a very factual look amongst us Scientologists. If anybody is not a dyed-in-the-wool Scientologist in the audience, just omit the next hour of lecture. While I am not going to use very technical terminology, I would stretch your credulity if you had not seen this. Now, I spoke of past lives. We call them past lives, not reincarnations. Why do we call them past lives? Because they're past lives. Why don't we call them reincarnations? I don't know what a reincarnation is, neither do you. But there are a lot of words connected with it. But a life span could be considered to be a period of isness, identified and located. A period of isness, identified and located. Now, when you have a period of isness, this is not quite the same as existence. You know, something can exist without being. You know, this lectern up here can exist. It is existing, you might say, but it has no awareness thereof. So therefore, a period of a life carries with it the connotation of having some remote idea that it is going on. And this is a bit better than existence. Well, we have a Scientology term. We say something is. The oddity is this, that these spooks that haunt people, every once in a while somebody is haunted by the image of his dead mother, or haunted by the image of his past wife, or so on. When he sits around and mourns the dear departed in any way, he is to some degree haunted with the image of that person, which is no longer there in person, don't you see? What he is regretting is the absence of an isness. Well, now, how does he come about regretting the absence of an isness? Mama is no longer there, so he now regrets that Mama isn't. Well, there's this oddity about it. The absence could only take place if it originally was. Now, you don't own, at this moment, a great deal of London, really, as you sit here. And if part of it were to disappear, you wouldn't miss it. This is one of the bones of contention of Scientology, you see. You wouldn't miss it. Therefore, the simple statement of loss is meaningless unless one had to begin with. Now, if you own Trafalgar Square, lock, stock, and barrel, and it got turned over as repayment on Lend-Lease... Somebody's kidding you, by the way, about the repayment of Lend-Lease. The whole American public is mad because no Lend-Lease or interest or anything is ever paid, you see. And all of the nations that have had some Lend-Lease are telling everybody they're broke because they have to pay. The American public's never heard about it. And so we sort of get the idea that this must be a political football of some kind or another. Nations are not above using these footballs. Very probably the U.S. Treasury is lying to the president and the rest of the people about the repayment of any Lend-Lease repaid just to keep its balances straight. So there's something on both ends of this. But here we have Trafalgar Square. We own it lock, stock, and barrel, and one day, a bunch of U.S. trucks come up and they carry it off and it disappears. After that, we keep going by there saying, well, there was Trafalgar Square. Now, everybody in London, to some degree, owns a bit or a piece of Trafalgar Square. Why? Because you've been there. Familiar. A landmark. Orientation point. A point from which you can view things. You would be very startled if somebody came along and put up a sign on Trafalgar Square saying, private property, keep out. Wouldn't you? That's right. All right, now, but supposing, as you own it, it disappears, well, you then miss it. You mourn for it a little bit. You say, well, Trafalgar Square, good place. How'll I ever get another pigeon pie, you know? And it's gone now. What is your consideration? Your consideration is that it was. And so we get the whole manifestation of stuck on the time track. Why? Granting beingness, we understand something about. But how about granting isness? This is something new. The memory of mother, or an aunt, or Trafalgar Square, is painful only when one granted any of these things isness. One said, it is. Now he recognizes that it isn't. So isn'tness is real only when compared to isness. Right? All right, let's take a hypothetical glue factory where they ship horses out on the outskirts someplace that thee and me never saw. We don't use as a landmark. We have nothing to do with. We don't own any of the stock in the glue factory. We don't belong to the Society for Prevention of Cruelty to Animals and Horseshoers. And so we hear that this factory has been torn down and destroyed and will be nevermore. Meaningless. We never granted it any isness, so we don't have any isn'tness. Follow that? Well, here's an odd exercise. You know exactly, I'm sure, what I'm talking about. But let's take an exercise here. I'm not getting into a processing session here. But think of somebody who was, that you used to know, not necessarily somebody departed or dead, but just somebody you used to know. Got that? You all got somebody you used to know now? All right. Now get the idea of granting isness to that person out in front of you.
Yes.
Can you do that easily?
Yeah.
All right. Do you get the feel that goes along with it? They sort of exist again a little bit, don't they? Now, a Thetan does this all the time, otherwise he never has anything. It would just be a total zero across the boards as far as havingness is concerned if he didn't from time to time go along granting this isness. But having granted isness, he apparently never knows when to quit. And he gets himself granting isness, whereas some other agreements now say that it isn't. So it's an invalidation of himself that mother or an aunt or Trafalgar Square are no longer there. To some tiny degree, he is still granting these things isness. And all other considerations say they aren't. Now, in view of the fact that a Thetan does nothing quite as well as survive, he does this beautifully. Every time he grants an isness, he has a tendency to grant a lot of survival with it. So he gets continuing isness, which, when it discontinues, then invalidates his postulate. Thus he feels lacking in power. He feels downscale. He feels sad. Saw his mother going around, whipping up food, keeping the house straight, keeping things running, and then she disappears. He was granting her a lot of isness. And the two or three little times when it looked like she was going to go into isn'tness, he granted her a lot of continuing isness. See? You know, he says, Mother will go on living. Mother will continue to survive. You know, Mother is continuingly. And then all of a sudden, Mother isn't. An invalidation of self, isn't it? But if he had never granted any isness, he would then have no invalidation of self because of it. So a lot of people, when they get way down tone scale, solve this by never granting any isness to anything and wonder why they can't see anymore. Do you follow that? They no longer do this trick because it's too painful. They have developed another postulate. They say, well, why own anything? Because I'll just lose it. And if I lose it, it will make me very sad. And I don't want to be sad anymore. What they're saying is, I don't like to have my postulates invalidated. And we get this whole matter of continuing isness, which is existence, which is present time. Present time is simply a continuing isness, which you are repetitively granting, and then in some tricky way, conceiving that it is granting you something. You see? Now, present time could exist to a marked degree without your participation in it, but when you participate in it, you grant it isness. You say it will continue. That's why people feel so bad about things like radiation. They say, here's a potentiality that can wipe out all of the isness I'm granting. And therefore, this potentiality is a potentiality of invalidation of all of my isnesses granted on this sphere in this series of lives or whatever I'm doing here. Therefore, everybody feels bad about it. No more track. No future isness. Invalidation of all postulates. The genetic line, and those who are not too familiar with Scientology and so forth, please omit the next few sentences, because I have to tell you a fact. E-meter tests on random groups of Homo sapiens demonstrates reaction on the lost planets because of radiation. Demonstrates in the genetic line the loss of planet after planet after planet after planet after planet because radiation appeared on the scene. Now, I'd never mention very much about this if it didn't influence two things very intimately, and one was children, and the other thing is the feeling we all have toward radiation, the reaction which it causes. Just as an experiment, put somebody on a detector, or even a police lie detector, something as elementary and as that, and just ask them about, this person knows nothing about radiation, he's not even worried about A-bombs, something. Ask him if he ever lost a planet because of radiation. And you get the needles falling off the pins. And you say, how many? And you eventually can get some tremendous number. Now, you could ask him at the same time, have you ever lost any oceans? And you would get no reaction. You could ask him, have you ever lost any cats? And you'd get just a little twitch. You know? So it's a real heavy reaction, which is unmistakable. And we have to take this into account, because what are we looking at? We're looking at a genetic line reaction. And it says, radiation equals no planet. When radiation appears, the planet goes. That is what people think. That's what electrical thought detector devices of any type would tell you they think. That is what seems to add up. Radiation appears, planet goes. If radiation occurs, the planet will be destroyed. Man is, or other life forms coming up the genetic track. It's kind of odd apologizing about past lives, because I don't know how the biologist ever accounts for the idea of evolution if he doesn't grant the idea that the organism has lived before. This would be quite tricky. If he does explain it in any other fashion, he must explain it in such a tricky fashion that is incomprehensible indeed. Where does he think this blueprint called a human body comes from, if it isn't stored someplace? You mean the fellow throws the blueprints away, and the next time he builds something, why, he gets that set of blueprints back. This postulates an archives 8,000 miles straight up on cloud 9.9. Now, maybe such an archives could exist, but actually there is a much more thorough way to look at it and say that the genetic blueprint is simply carried by the individual. And part of this genetic blueprint tells us this incredible fact, that the genetic line is not devoted entirely and completely and only to this planet, but embraces many other planets and much other activity in the field of radiation. Therefore, we are actually being very cagey and not being entirely truthful when we say, well, we're not quite sure why we have this amount of reaction on radiation, because we are quite sure. Any one of you could make this exact experiment, and you would discover this, that lives, series of, became impossible in the appearance of radiation. Radiation says no future, and it says it genetically. It said there will be no future mock-ups on this tract. Go find another planet, if you can, and develop it from the state of barbarism up to a state of dinosaurs, if you can. Take it from lichen and moss and run it all the way up the long and tedious path of millions of years. Spend another 500,000 years lying on the beach of some ammonia sea, trying to find out how to walk. That's what this says. So that's a very serious thing. Life looks at it rather tiredly. Doesn't like it. And you get a tremendous charge on the subject of survival the moment that radiation shows up. So that the genetic line becomes so dispersed and so upset that it starts to branch out inside the organism itself, and that is cancer. The various cells of the organism say, well, it's all up with this track. I'll strike out for myself. And they develop some sort of birth organism of some kind or another, and there they go. And you get a cancerous growth, and that is cancer. That's all there is to cancer. Strike out for myself. It's a revolt in the body by a cell which is going forward on its own developmental line. In other words, it's anticipating this occurrence of no more planet. All right. Children start to adapt themselves in a wild, crazy way. Anything they can think of, anything the organism can dream up, any backtrack success that was ever vaguely workable in a radioactive planet becomes readapted by the organism. Thus you get two-headed children and all sorts of other genetic monstrosities. See, they say, well, we're not quite willing to quit. We will try to make an anti- or radiation-proof body. And therefore, we'll build anything we can think of, and then maybe one of these forms can survive in a radioactive world. A tulip, for instance. Tulips are very highly bred, bombarded with X-rays and radiation, reverted back to the original tulip. Just bing. It said, well, I survived a long time this way. And maybe by going way back down the track to this form, maybe I'll get a hold of all of these thousands of intervening years, and I'll develop in some other fashion forward toward possible radiation and thus have a future. And you get the mechanism of going backtrack. So you can expect children to suddenly appear that look like barbarians indeed with 2-foot jaws and so forth. I mean, all kinds of oddities occur. Rather nasty picture that the scientists posed for us. But the point is that it's quite comprehensible. The moment that you put people on e-meters, study the problem, ask them the questions, what this is all about, you merely find out that all of this activity of misdirection in the genetic line is simply an effort to survive in spite of something which has always heretofore knocked the planet off. Now, possibly radiation has hit this planet before. A friend of mine at the Explorers Club told me about going down through 7 layers of civilization in a cave. He got down to pots and shards, and down below that to just nothing. And then through the last strata, green glass, just exactly the kind of green glass that now covers a quarter of a mile of desert out in the middle of New Mexico after the first A-bomb explosion. Sand turns into this green glass. I found this in the Middle East some time ago. It's quite interesting. Little oddities, a possibility that radiation has appeared before on this planet. But the E-meter tells you, for whatever it's worth, well, it's fairly valid. They hang men with it. Its value is good enough so that a police respirator and electronic impulse counter and pulse-ometer hung together, if they say he did the crime, they generally put a rope around his neck and let him dance the jig. You see, so that's the kind of evidence we're talking about. We do have that evidence by asking these questions. So this says to us that the appearance of radiation deflects or deranges the genetic line. And the types of derangement come under the category of trying to find a type of organism to survive, and each cell, you might say, is liable to get some different idea from any other cell. And so you get strange cancers that nobody can explain, types of cancer nobody's ever heard of before. You get all sorts of growths and misdirections. You get all sorts of babies that look peculiar and do peculiar things and so on. In other words, it's just life in general, and that isn't some detached thing. It's just a bunch of thetans in general are trying, like mad, to find some way through this problem. And these aberrations, monstrosities, and illnesses are their cures or solutions, which might possibly work out. At least that's the way we can theorize on it, because the theory works in practice. One of the most effective processes to run upon this particular thing, by the way, is simply this one. You understand that the reason they do this is because they're convinced there's going to be no future. They're convinced there's going to be no future planet. And they're so afraid of that that they try these other things. It isn't that radiation does anything to anybody. You see? It's the fear that it will. Listen, if they blew down all the buildings in London and New York and Washington, and if we still had some food, and we could still swing an axe or a hammer and a saw, we would probably put some good cities back together again. You see? But the sudden aspect of disaster, as sweeping as atomic fission, convinces people that they no longer have the energy to build that civilization on that earth before. And is this failure which they're looking at not the actual effect of radiation at all? Now I'm talking about the mental reaction to radiation as demonstrated by an E-meter. And it has taken us into some peculiar fields of research, believe me. But we have a premise which works, and we have this process. Look around and tell me what will be here in another 10 minutes. And you just let the fellow do this, And he only tells you things he's absolutely sure will still be here in 10 minutes. And then graduate him to a half an hour, and then graduate him to an hour, and then graduate him. You find out most people, you say, what would be here tomorrow? Tell me something that would be here for sure tomorrow morning. You're absolutely convinced would be here tomorrow morning. It's quite interesting. They very seldom find anything. You know, they just go, duh. You haven't got that much future. And we get the phenomenon of building up and increasing one's certainty of future. And as soon as he starts increasing certainty of future, the next thing he knows, he has a tremendous potential survival. And that is all he's working on. He's not working on what's going to happen to him. He's merely working on how much survival does he have. And he uses signs and symbols such as radiation, the cost of living, how nice his wife is to him, or husband is to her, to tell how much survival he has. In other words, he's got a tremendous number of signs and symbols worked out that tell him how much survival he has. We walk through the office, and the boss looks at us. And we say, I haven't got much survival, have I? Now, we walk through the office again, and the boss says, how are you, Jenks? Why don't you come out and have some tea? The guy says, survival, terrific. Boss and I, just like that. That's me on top. Music hall joke. Anyhow, look at this. A person is using other things than himself to tell him continually how much survival he has, how much future there is, and eventually something tells him there is none, and he believes it. The fool. Do you know this is good enough so that you get a person very, very anatin, very unconscious, you know, way down under? If you were to whisper to him quietly, you know you just died, he probably would. Sounds silly, but it's for true. I've had people report this to me, knowing what happens in Dianetics, that this has happened in operating rooms. Well, the fellow won't live through it. I doubt he'll live a half an hour after the operation, and right on the button, a half an hour after the operation, the guy's dead. Doctor says, you see, I was right. No, he wasn't. His postulate worked. Now, therefore, future is out of our control, we think. But it isn't ever. Because the truth of the matter is you might get thrown down tone scale, they might ball you up in a black ball of mud, like the biologist would like to tell you you were when you first dug out of it, which you weren't. That's akin to the Egyptian theory of a scarab. The modern scientific theory was actually adapted from the scarab, I think. Did you ever watch scarabs? Well, they bring life out of little balls of mud. So they actually, the whole Egyptian civilization thought that a ball of mud was the beginning of life. And that became modern scientific thought, of course. You think I'm wrong. You better look this up. All right. That's where this mud to man theory began. Now, we take this idea of no future and we get a person on a collapsed present time. Now, it's a very funny thing to collapse present time, but it can be done. The less future a fellow has, the less present time he has. And it works like this. The fellow who is alert and can do things and has lots of things has a present time of several seconds wide. At least several seconds. See, the distance from past to future is several seconds wide. This is the way it looks to him. Therefore, he has time to act. Therefore, he can act. Several seconds. He doesn't just pinpoint time, you know. But as he begins to lose future, and as his past begins to seem discreditable to him, he gets... gets to have a millisecond present time. Just a millisecond, you know, not even that. It's awfully thin. Everything else starts to look thin, too. This is a description of it, no more. This is not a fact. But it is true that he doesn't have much present time, you see. So you ask him to come to present time, and it's not even there. It's so narrow that he couldn't find it even if he got on it. He goes above and below it a second or two, and it worries him, it haunts him. A man who is planning, who isn't planning several seconds ahead of the event, isn't in several seconds ahead of the event, doesn't make very good plans. Best thing to do is to plan it all out and then have it happen and have that all happen simultaneously. If you're going to turn a car around a difficult corner, the best thing to do is to turn it all the way around the corner so that you can turn it all the way around the corner, you see? Of course, if you're really driving, you're simply izzing positions of a car. If you go around a corner, why, the car is on this part, it is on that part, it is around the corner, see? Yeah, if you're really doing this well. Well, we get this idea and phenomenon of a narrow or non-existent present time. Now, what happens then as a person loses future? He certainly gets crowded in the present. He says there is no time, and boy, that is awfully close to being true. Therefore, his havingness is tremendously reduced. Therefore, he gets no benefit from present time, even if he got into it. Why? Because he has no future. And the whole subject of radiation is bound up in this idea of no future. And all you have to do is get somebody to change his mind any way you can, that he has a future, that there is something in the future. Get him to tolerate something on the future track that won't be painful or dreadful to him, and he recovers from all these odd little bits and pieces of strange phenomena. But that tells us that the child who is born and who looks and sounds sort of idiotic, and there'll be Lord knows how many of them in the next 10 years, won't be auditable by old standards. So we've got to have a new method of auditing entirely that will give them a future. And if we could give them enough future, they'd go back to battery and build right. You see that? As soon as they felt there was some future, why, they changed their mind and changed the structure. So there's a chance of saving these things. We've already processed mongoloid idiots, done things with them. Well, we can do it better today. Much, much, much better today. Because we can process a tiny baby, and not with any esoteric method.